Hi, I'm Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us a unique guest and a unique topic for my show. But I've sought her out because she wrote a book, Training Hard to Train Dogs, and I have a dog that I was having a problem with, and I was getting desperate. Welcome to my show, Peggy Swager, and how are you?
Thank you very much, and I'm fine.
So before we get started, see, normally my show is about science and alternative medicine, and so you're unique for my show. But I figured if I have a hard to train dog, that other of my listeners must have the same problem too. I can't be the only one in the world. So tell us a little bit about you and how you came to do what you do and where they can find you.
Well, I have been doing animal behavior work for several years, not to mention or hint at my age, but in the 70s I was working with hard-to-train horses. And you talked a little bit about children. My child got me into a breed of dog that was extremely hard to train, and I had to either sink or float with that particular breed of dog, so I knuckled under and for a year started to change my study from doing what you could say modifying horse behavior when the horses were misbehaving to modifying dogs that were more difficult to train.
So where can people find you?
I have a website called Peggy Swager, SWAGER.com. And on that website, you can find several of the articles which I've written. And actually, this year I had one of the articles win an award. And there's some other articles, information about house training when you're having difficulty and some other problems.
Well, that's what I want to talk to you about. And then I'll give you time to talk about anything you want to talk about.
Okay.
But I wanted to take a few minutes. I have a dog that has, he's an older dog, and he's a rescued dog, and he pees on the carpet. He will bark to come in, but he will make no noise or no indication that he needs to go out.
Mm-hmm.
It's driving me crazy.
And this is not a real uncommon problem. And this is a male dog, correct?
Yes.
Here's one of the myths that people think. A lot of people think that when male dogs pee inside the house, that they're marking their territory. What actually can happen is if a dog is feeling a little bit insecure, and rescue dogs, when you first get them, can feel a little bit insecure, and they can get into a habit of peeing in the house just because they're not as certain about their new environment. It tends to stress them out. And, well, hey, I'll admit sometimes when I'm stressed, I run to the bathroom a little bit more often. But they don't get into that housebreaking routine correctly at the beginning, and then it becomes a habit. Now, here's how I've worked with people that have had this kind of difficulty, and the way, actually, we ended up with a dog that had this kind of difficulty where he would pee in the house, and the most common time he'd do it is right after, if my daughter stepped outside, he would throw a little bit of anxiety fit, and he would go and pee, and I would be standing there. So here's how we broke that habit. We made what you would call a belly band. You can actually buy these on the internet, and they are called belly bands for the boys. And for the boys, it just does go around their belly and covers their little private parts. And what happens is, and with us, we just used a strip of blue jean material and a little Varelco and a female pad to catch any little accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And having that on him became something that made him aware every time and a little bit less comfortable every time he tended to try to pee inside. So he started to cooperate more about peeing inside by putting that belly band on him. I mean, it wasn't an instant cure, but he started to stop it over the next few months. And eventually we got to where we could start removing it and having some success. And he completely house broke and
so
completely stopped the habit.
How do you, I mean, he doesn't do it all the time anymore because he's very sensitive if I get upset to him.
That's,
he really is.
That's absolutely key. What he's doing, and this is where a lot of people get into trouble. Some dogs are extremely sensitive. Ironically, sometimes they become sensitive to things we don't even think about. Either if we're stressed out, the dog cannot seem to take our stress level with certain dogs. Not all dogs, but there are certain highly sensitive dogs. Some of the things that can kind of help is some counter training to help build up the dog's basic stability level. One is basic training, just even sit and stay, and then you kind of walk away, and that starts building them more of a foundation of feeling like they themselves are not as insecure. And playing with the dog can also help build up what we call confidence building.
Okay.
And that may be one of, I know I've run it at times on my website, a little article on building confidence, and that may be one of them too. Now, here's another thing that you can also do with the dog that's peeing inside is if you anticipate the dog needing to go to the bathroom, for instance, let's say it's been in the house for a little bit or it's first thing in the morning or you just took it out of the crate when you came home, if you go outside with the dog and walk it around, because that helps stimulate their need to go. As soon as they go outside, then you give them a treat. But you have to go out there with them. And when I give them a treat, I give them the best treat in the world. It's usually a little piece of chicken or a little piece of steak, because I want it to be something that's memorable. And I don't give them that piece of chicken or steak for anything else. So pretty soon the dog is going to the door and say, you know, I want out. And for a few times I'll go out there with them and reward them. And pretty soon I can transition to rewarding them at the door. You know, peek outside after we've had success maybe for a week. I'll transition to where you can go out by yourself, and when you come to the door, I'll give you the treat, and eventually I'll just drop the treat because they're in the habit.
So, sorry, I'm in the South, and allergies are prevalent here now. Why does he know to bark to come in, but he doesn't know to bark to go out?
He's not as motivated to go out right now, and if you do the treat outside, he will more likely become more motivated. And some dogs, you know, he does want back in, and he's a little demanding. He is not as motivated to go outside. Sometimes the treat can change that. And some people, what they do instead is they'll hang a little bell on their door, and they'll teach the dog. They'll come up to it and just kind of get the dog, use a little treat to get the dog to bump the bell and then give the dog a treat. So pretty soon they learn to bump the bell because it meant a treat, and then they transition that into you bump the bell, then you get to go outside, and they might just toss the treat outside. So the dog starts learning to tell you when it needs to go outside.
Oh, that sounds as hard as raising a child to me. Okay, the next question I had was my dog has and we've had him like 5 or 6 years. He's not new to our house. He tears up socks. He's got bones. He's got big rawhide bones, and he's got toys. But he would much prefer a sock, and he would much prefer a sock that's been on someone's feet.
Yeah, and a lot of, and I see this a little bit more often in dogs that are a little less secure. It smells like you, and sometimes they will actually tear up something that you have been working with or handling. I just worked with a gentleman about a month ago. He had a dog that was less secure, and he had these tapes that he was taping. And the dog noticed this obsession with these tapes, took down the tapes, and chewed them up. And he kind of lost the cool with the dog, and I said, you know, what you want to do, and this is one of the things in the book. It's called the Leave It Command. In other words, you teach the dog the Leave It Command, and you can do it with several different items, and then you take a specific item that the dog is bothering, and like the sock, and you teach, after you teach it with maybe food or a bone or something else, then you start transitioning, and you start saying, leave that sock, and you reward it to leave it, and then you take it and give it something else to do. But you sit there while you're under control. I'm sorry,
he only does it when we're not here, though.
Yeah, that's, and again, that's him kind of missing you. he's probably, you know, there's some dogs have separation anxiety, and then some dogs have little hints of problems that are similar to separation anxiety. For instance, the one dog that we had when my daughter would go outside, it would get upset and go. I mean, I'm standing there, and the dog would get upset and go and eliminate in the house. And it was just a matter of being upset about being left. One of the things you can do is give the dog, at the level that your dog's having issues, you can give the dog, a lot of people like to use what they call a Kong. It's an indestructible little chew toy, but they'll put either kibbles or peanut butter in it, so that the dog is distracted when they leave. Because a lot of dogs get upset within the first 15 minutes, and once they get past that 15-minute time zone, then they settle down. There's also a technique called I'll Be Back, and it's I did a YouTube video on that, and it is for separation anxiety, but it teaches the dog to settle down about your leaving, and it could possibly help in your situation. And it's linked to my website under videos.
Okay. So now why don't we start with some of the things that's in your book since we've covered my dogs. Oh, do you do things about caretaking for dogs too?
How do you mean caretaking?
How do you clean their teeth?
Oh, cleaning their teeth. Now, brushing their teeth is a matter of getting them used to step by step. For you doing that, and I like, for toothbrushing, I like the one that slips over your little finger to try to rub it, and you actually start by rubbing in their teeth and their gums. And here's one of those things that vets probably don't like, but it actually can work, is if you get, there's certain kind of bones that are okay for dogs to chew. They're raw, and they are kind of like knuckle bones.
Uh-huh.
And they tend to help clean the teeth. And there's some things, if you don't really want to brush, that you can also buy that with some dogs, if they'll chew, it'll help clean the teeth. But as far as toothbrushing, yeah, that's a good way of cleaning the teeth. Otherwise, if you don't want to do it and you're worried about bones, or the vet's recommending against bones, and you have to be selective, like they say, no chicken bones, you will just end up taking the dog in once a year to the vet, and they'll clean it.
Okay. All right, so what made you write this book? You must have had some problem.
Well, like I said, my daughter got into a breed of dogs that's a little bit more problematic, Jack Russell Terriers, and I had started at that time doing some puppy classes and training people for agility and obedience and other things. And then I started, because I was dealing with a Jack Russell Terrier club and everybody seemed to have difficulty training their dog, I started to get into hard-to-train dogs. And I now consult, do behavioral consultations. About 3 weeks ago, I went down with a dog that had tried to bite a 10-year-old, and the lady who tried to prevent it was the owner, and she ended up getting nicked. And so now the dog, she's wondering, should I take it to the Humane Society? They said, we'll put it down immediately because it's got a dog bite record. And she called me in to see if the dog could be salvaged. And actually, with training, that dog's quite salvageable. The dog was just lacking some training as to how to behave when people come into the house. It was a dog breed that tends to be more of a guarding breed. It was not a pit bull, not a boxer, let me think. Oh, bulldog, American bulldog. And so because they hadn't had the right training and communication with this dog, it would get excited. In fact, when I came in, I wasn't sure that I wasn't going to get bit. I had to kind of work with the dog, and once I convinced the dog that it didn't need to bite me, it was quite cooperative with some basic training. You kind of start with basic training to set some rules, and then you work into specific problems. And that's a lot of what my book deals with, is more specific problems. It has the basic training, but one of the problems that a lot of people have is one of the case examples in the book, and it starts like this. You know, we have two dogs, and the one dog has decided to attack the other dog, and it's getting worse, and now the other dog had to go to the vet. What can I do? Well, we talked about how we trained a dog, and it had the basic sit and stay, but it needed some more training to teach it not, it did not have permission to attack the other dog. And part of that gets into leadership training. This dog was more of a take-charge dog, and it did attack and send the dog to the hospital twice, and so we went through this retraining program, and we resolved the problem.
Oh, that's amazing. Can you rehabilitate troubled dogs? And I guess what I mean by that is, you know, dogs that have been abused, like that football player that abused all his dogs, can they be rehabilitated?
They can. And as an interesting perspective about dog behavior, you can take on a dog, I can take on a dog, and I can rehabilitate it. But sometimes that rehabilitation is dependent upon a human-dog relationship, and it becomes mine in that dog's relationship. I cannot always rehome the dog. It will not transfer that relationship to somebody else. One of the problems with dogs like that, and this is a sad fact, is it takes somebody of a higher caliber dog training ability to be able to keep the dog from being a problem, and there's just not enough of those people around. That's why, and this is a sad fact, like the humane societies will go, they get in 100 dogs, they'll go through and weed through and pick 10 that they think that can be retrained and rehomed, and the rest, well, they have more dogs than they can rehome. And it's going to be the ones that are not the real difficult cases. I took on a difficult case about a year ago, and it took me 7 months to reform the dog, and it was still hard to rehome. And it was one that we could transition, and it was just one that had been abused by the other people, in part because they didn't understand that dog training, some dogs you can get away with what I call reactive dog training. In other words, don't do that, Fido, bam, okay, you'll know next time. That doesn't work with some dogs. You have to be proactive. You have to teach it. Like I said, the leave it command. You know, you drop some food on the floor. Are you racing the dog to try to get that back up, or are you going to kick it when it gets there if you don't want it to get it? No, you just can teach it leave it, and you just say leave it. It learns to leave it. And when you teach it leave it, pretty soon it just expects not to get it when it hits the floor. So you're not in a race. You're not in a fight. And your dog is behaving in a manner in which you're a lot happier.
So how do you deal with a dog? Let's say that you're a child playing out in the street. You're riding your bicycle down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And an aggressive dog comes from the yard. That happened to me when I was a kid. And it was a little bitty dog, but it still scared me every time it did it. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with the dog so that it doesn't want to come and get you?
You know, this is where the person should be more responsible. And I remember as a kid, some dogs coming out of a fence and biting my toes when I was walking by, and I did nothing wrong. I had sandals on, so I can identify this. I'm in a more rural area, and we have people that think 5 acres, they just can let their dogs run, or they're lunging at the fence and that type stuff and scaring people and kids and other dogs. Because people don't always train their dogs, I never carried pepper spray. But I had a dog that I was walking, and another dog that was loose came up, grabbed the dog, and almost killed it. I mean, we were lucky. They thought it might be a couple thousand in bills and may not be able to save it, but we got lucky, and the dog was able to be saved, and that the dog did nothing to be grabbed. So after that, I started to carry pepper spray. And I know some people may say, oh, isn't that cruel? I was walking down the street a couple years later without that dog, and somebody's dog got out and started to come at me. And they have a look in their eye when they're in a dangerous mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I'm going to use that pepper spray. And the other day, that same dog attacked a little boy unprovoked, the grandchild of the kid, of the guy, and he had to have 7 stitches. I think if I hadn't had pepper spray, I would have been in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, pepper spray isn't the only kind of spray you can get, but if you're having dogs that constantly harass you, I'm one of these people, partly because we have a neighborhood where, you know, it's pretty rural and a lot of people do let dangerous dogs run. I'm one of these people that say, protect yourself. I'm pretty good at backing down a dog when they come running at me by, you know, I'll pull back my shoulders and snap my fingers and in a pretty authoritative voice say no. And most of the dogs I can back down. That dog did not back down. And considering he attacked a grandchild that just jumped off a stool and did nothing wrong in the kitchen, I doubt that I would be here today had I not had the pepper spray. So I guess I'm saying if you really think you're in danger, take something if you have people who are irresponsible. Otherwise, I pull back my shoulders and I use a pretty authoritative voice and I snap my fingers and I stop a lot of dogs dead that way.
What do you do about a dog that barks all the time?
What situation is it barking in?
Well, just, I don't have one, but I'll take my little dog. He doesn't do it anymore, but when I first got him, all he ever did was yap. Yap, 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 yap. Everything,
and,
you know, everything. Yap, 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 yap.
That's excitement at times. And we had, I swear, you know, if there's going to be a breed of dog that's going to put you through every pace of everything a dog could possibly do wrong, practically it's the Jack Russell Terrier. We had one. It was a seven-month-old when we got it. We took it to an agility event, and we're on the sidelines, and the dog would not stop barking. And here's the progression we did, you know. It wouldn't listen to it. It was way too excited. So a drop of lemon juice, the dog, and we do a progression. And I have this information in the book as far as what I call upping the stakes, where you start out mild and you progressively get a little bit more discouraging. Because you don't, you know, some people go and they get, you have a sensitive dog. You have to watch and not be too harsh. The way you find out what is harsh enough is you start out mild and slowly progress upward to more discouraging. Because some dogs think what you don't think is harsh is too harsh. And then you get into submissive and other behaviors. The dog gets upset. And then you start getting into peeing in the house if it gets real upset. And people will stress it out with that type of stuff. But anyway, so we started with a little drop of lemon juice to try to discourage the barking.
What did you do with the lemon juice? Put it on his tongue?
Right on the tongue. Just a drop on the tongue. And so the dog, that didn't phase it. So we did lime juice. And the dog stopped the second and then went back to barking. And then we did Banaca. Dog, shut up.
Really?
Yep. And we didn't start with Banaca because some dogs are tenacious. And if you start discouraging harder and harder, then they will give up. And
that's
they won't,
funny.
But it was. It was so funny. The Banaca shut up the dog. Just a little squirt in the mouth. So now you know what I think of Banaca. No. But that's one way of a dog that is just so excited it can't focus on you and it's just going to yap, 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 bark, 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 won't shut up, won't pay attention to you.
I'll tell you what, if my dog does something wrong,
mm-hmm.
when I walk in the door coming home from work, he's out of there.
That's right.
I mean, he's gone. He hides.
Yep, yep, yep. And
I know. I'll say, okay, Peanut, what did you do? I know you did something. What'd you do? I have to go
yeah.
hunt it down.
I could always tell with my little Jack Russell Terrier when I'd come in the house. It's like, okay, what is it? And I agree because they know that you are going to be unhappy about this. Now, at the time, that doesn't stop them. So you have to use other things. And it just depends on what the issue is.
So what about digging? That's a terrible habit that some dogs have.
It is, and I don't remember if it's come out or not. I just did an article for AKC Gazette on digging, so this should be fresh in my mind. There's several different things. If you're looking at barrier digging, as in digging out, I really think one of the easiest things to do is to pull up a little bit of the barrier and put down chicken wire and then roll your grass back on it, water it until it gets growing again, and that will certainly stop them. If you're talking one or two little places in your garden, or if they're trying to dig out in one little place underneath the fence, because there's another dog on the other side,
mm-hmm.
if you put a little bit of their droppings in the hole, they will not dig there anymore.
Really?
So it's the specifics, yeah, that's one of the, I've seen that break dogs so quick. If it's a specific spot, if you've got a whole area, and if it's really hardcore, I have been, you know, like if you have a dog that's constantly digging all over the backyard, I have gone to a citronella collar that's a remote collar that you can, it's got a little ringing sound to warn them to stop,
mm-hmm.
and then the spray. And I do it when they aren't looking because I want them to not dig when they think I'm not there.
Well, that's when everything happens usually, at least at my house, is when nobody's home.
Yeah, yeah. But some of the things, like I said, some of the playing with the dog, and again, the one chapter in the book is called Nervous Nellies, and it kind of gets into some of the sensitivity on dogs. Some dogs just really can't take criticism at all. I mean, we call them soft dogs. In other words, they just overreact to authority. And for that reason, those dogs especially, you have to back off on any kind of reprimands, and not use that to discourage behaviors, but go into the mode of training them for the behavior you want. It isn't fun, but it ends up being the way you have to do it with the dog.
Well, when you say training, I mean, nobody really knows what that means, so I can only say read this book because it's a very descriptive book, and each training for each problem is unique and different, I guess you would say.
You're right. There's a lot of the problems that people are dealing with, and I just go into detail on different problems. And that's, even though we get into a little bit of basic training, we quickly go into, if you're having this problem, here's a solution. If you're having that problem, here's a solution. You know, some of the chapters are, there's a whole chapter on house training, everything from male marking to submissive peeing to greeting peeing. And that's, you know, some dogs get pretty excited when you come home and it's splash, splash, splash. And
I have another interesting problem that my dog, and I'm sure it's because he's excited, that maybe you'll know something else. He loves to go in the car.
Oh, yeah.
More
yes.
than anything in the world, he loves to go in the car. So we always take him to the bathroom, and we actually say, go potty, and he knows what that means. If you mm-hmm. say it kind of, go potty, peanut, you know, kind of firm, he knows what that means. But when we get into the car, if he can't see us in the store, like when we go to Blockbuster and get a movie, mm-hmm. and we get behind the shelves and he can't see us,
mm-hmm.
inevitably he will poop in the back seat of the car.
That's called frustration elimination. And yes, he's getting frustrated because you're in the car. The I'll be back technique that I talked about are for separation anxiety, because this is a form of separation anxiety. And that will help him desensitize on that.
Tell me again about that, because I'm missing some of that.
It's kind of a weekend program that you go through. A lot of separation anxiety techniques is all about just desensitizing. You know, you pick up the key or you do this to try, and you try to get them to relax about it. This actually teaches them that the way that they get you to come back is to relax. Now,
okay.
If you don't want to do the training or you haven't had the time to do the training, sometimes putting them in a crate in the car will help. But
that's going to be my next question about crates.
Oh, let's go for it.
Well, some people think that's abusive, but
it saved me
when you told me on the phone that day to get a crate.
Let me tell you what's abusive. Does your dog ever have to go to the vet in its life? Yeah, when it's spayed or neutered. Or my dog, and here's the biggest example of why a crate is not abusive. My cookie dog, I crate trained her as a puppy, and because dogs up to a year old have killed themselves chewing on things in the house because they're cutting teeth and they chew through a cord, I kept her in a crate when I wasn't home as a safety precaution. After that dog about killed my dog, she had to go into the vet, and she had to be in something that is, what, a crate. It's their cages. It's the same as a crate. If that dog had not been crate trained, she had already been traumatized by the dog trying to kill her. And if she had not been crate trained, she would have doubled the trauma because she would be in a environment that scared her to death because she wasn't used to it. But she'd been crate trained, so she could find some kind of security while she had to stay at the vet for 24 hours while they monitored her. When she came home, she would sometimes wake up on my lap when she was dozing and jump and run into the crate and hide, because after that attack, that was a pretty traumatic attack. And some of the training I'd done with her, I was worried I could never show her to Jilly again because she was pretty traumatized. I mean, that dog, I dug her out of that dog's teeth 3 different times and got bit up myself, and it, you know, it was a miracle that she survived it at all. I mean, this is a big dog, and she was, what, 12 pounds, and this is about a 90-pound dog, a lot stronger than me. But anyway, if she hadn't been crate trained, she would not have had the sanctuaries that helped her recover from this trauma. And also some of the, you know, training with me and working with her builds confidence in the people, and the dog learns to relax. She did actually go back to competing in agility. I was glad. I wasn't sure, because she had to be around other dogs
mm-hmm.
when you're in that kind of competition. I was really worried after what happened to her that she wouldn't, but she did.
So how do you determine what size of crate that you get? And how long do you leave them in there? And what do you put them in there for? I mean, if you're trying to teach them, not when you're leaving for the day or something, obviously, but if you're trying to teach them something, if I don't want him to chew on his sock, for example, do I put him in the crate?
Punishment and crates should not go together.
Okay.
Now, that there's a difference between punishment and time out. If I have a dog that is, I tell it, don't jump up, and Jack Russell Terriers, you know, the dog wants the ball, you put it on top of the TV because you're done playing with it, and the dog's jumping up, and you say, no, let's not do that, and you discourage the dog from doing that, you know, no, let's stop that, and the dog understands and goes right back to doing it, then we might take it and give it about a 15-minute time out to gather its thoughts or just to give up the mission of trying to do that. I'm not yelling at the dog. I'm not spanking it. I'm not putting it out there with harsh words. I say, that's punishment. You don't want to associate the crate with punishment. As far as crate training, when they're puppies, some of your better breeders will start the crate training process, and we would just toss a treat in and let the dog be in the crate. If the dog has to be in the crate for a lot of periods of time, and this is a trick for even you, if you have to leave the dog in the crate while you're gone and the dog tends to miss you, what I do is I set the crate right next to me when I'm watching TV and let the dog eat its meal in it and then take it outside or let it chew a bone in there. Yet the crate becomes a special place,
a very comforting place.
And, my daughter flew with one of her to the Nationals for her Jack Russell Terrier and to get it used to going on an airplane, because those are pretty small crates. They have to fit underneath the seat. And she would just put it there while she was working and doing other things, so it got used to laying in the crate and her being around.
Interesting. Those Jack Russells are a unique breed, aren't they? My friend has one, and the first thing it did was it would chase cars really badly, and it attacked a car wheel, and he had to take it to the vet and get it all fixed. And he didn't even get it out of the vet good, and they were cutting down a tree in the yard, and it attacked the chainsaw that they were cutting the tree with. And it messed him up so bad, and we treated him with a lot of alternative things, and he got well. But now when you call him, he goes the opposite way because something messed up in his hearing.
One of the things you're talking about can crop up in several breeds of dogs, and it's called a high chase drive and a high... And with some of these dogs, they will actually attack vacuums. Even some of your dachshunds will get to where you turn on the vacuum and it's attacking it. And what it is these are hunting breeds, and even some of your herding breeds will attack moving things, and they will attack things that have that kind of roaring noise. And it's a matter of you can train them against that. We had one Jack Russell that we got as about a little bit older dog. And it kept trying to attack the horses. and let me tell you, any dog that does that, kicking will not reform it. I can guarantee that, whether it's a herding breed or anything like that. So we did some work with it until it learned some obedience training kind of started the relationship, and we actually taught it to go alongside the horse. And once it finally found out it didn't have to attack the horse, it was one of the best ones we'd ever had when we go out riding, just staying right with us. It loved going with the horses after that, but you do have to address it, and they will get to attacking it. And I do talk a little bit about, I think it's called in the book, The Maid Must Die, because someone had an incident where the dog kept first attacking because the vacuum, and then it started to attack the maid because it was getting all upset because of the higher predatory drive.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense when you talk about it.
There is, Jack Russells are one of the toughest, and you really do have to train them to call off and work with them. You just can't leave them to their own means, and you have to have something to enforce it. Leashes are so wonderful and so underused as great training tools.
So tell me some stories that you've had, some of your success stories, and what the problem was and how you dealt with it so people can visualize what you're doing at home and be able to do it themselves.
I think the one that really helps the best is Shammy. She was a very pleasant and friendly, but she was a very dominant dog. And dominant's kind of overused for any kind of misbehavior, but this dog actually did, even though she was a retriever. She was golden retriever, Labrador retriever mix, usually a fairly passive dog, and learned how to sit and lay down and stay right away. The dog felt she was in charge. A few hints were that the dog would, when they played tug-of-war, and tug-of-war is not a bad game as long as the dog doesn't dominate the game and always win. The dog wouldn't always bring back toys. The dog started to take charge in little ways like that. And that's where the dog stepped up into the role of, I can decide what other dogs can stay in this household and not. And this can actually transition into, I can decide if certain people can come in the house. You don't let your dogs do that. And that's one of the case studies in the book. Some of the other problems that people have, I talk about using crates for training. One of the things that you can do is, we took one Jack Russell, usually it seems like Jack Russell Terriers are the worst. We had one Jack Russell Terrier that would not come to the owner to save her life. And we used the crate. We would play with the dog a little bit and then ask it to come, and it would say, absolutely not. You know, I'm 6-year-old and I've never had to come before. I'm the one in charge here. And then we'd say, okay, so we just put it in the crate, and then we'd take it had a litter, and they kept one of the male dogs, and we took that dog and started to play with it. Well, the dog threw a fit, didn't try to correct the dog for throwing a fit and whining and scraping, but we took it and played with this other dog, and then we put up the dog in the crate and took her back out and gave her a chance to earn that playtime by coming when she was told. And after about 3 or 4 times of this, she just kind of lowered her head and tucked her tail and said, all right, I guess I'll come when you call. And
really?
After that, she was an absolute, I will never come, I don't care if the house is burning type dog. And after just doing this, you barter. And that's one of the things I talk about in the book. You can't bully some dogs because they just don't conform. And Jack Russell is one of them.
Do they understand language, or do they just understand sounds and tones?
They, depending on the breed, and this is a little bit, some breeds are better than others, German Shepherds can understand a high vocabulary of words, and you can speak several words in a row, and they can distinguish them and put them together. They're one of the top as far as language understanding. Dogs know what you're saying, but they go a lot with the tone of voice. To them, that is part of the interpretation. There's a difference between no and a real harsh no.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a sensitive dog, sometimes that harsh no, they just get shattered and they forget whatever the no was about because you said it too hard. Does that sound like your dog?
Well,
your dog may not be that sensitive, but some are.
When I first got this dog, he was completely different than he is now. I mean, he yapped all the time, and he tore stuff up, and he annoyed you, and he didn't listen, and I don't know how to train, and not only that, I don't have the patience to do it, you know.
And that is not unusual for some of these dogs that they just don't understand. They're a take-charge dog. They are used to trying to run the show, but they're upset. I've seen this quite a bit, and actually, some of the basic training and the watch command in the book is one of those that really turns around a dog like yours. And what you do is you teach it to choose to look to you for guidance. And also the impulse control. I was working with a dog that this one woman had, it was a 10-year-old dog, and she said, I went to puppy class way back when, and I've gone to other classes, and the dog won't stay, ever. And I worked with a little bit of impulse control. And impulse control is a big one in the book, and that was part of what we used to reform Shammy, that them deciding to act on their ideas. But training them with the impulse control also teaches them how to look to you for leadership. And one of the lessons in the book, it's called Ken and Cookie, where he would practice this dog with impulse control, and this stopped this dog from that would have normally gone grabbed other dogs and grabbed things to actually stop when you toss out food for another dog instead of running up there and fighting with the dog.
Well, he's kind of where he'll do what I tell him to do.
Mm-hmm.
But not because I did anything with him. I think he saw what happened to my children when they didn't listen.
Well, they do want to follow a leader, and they do try to pick it out. But there are some dogs that are opportunists.
Well, he won't listen to my children. I mean, he won't listen to anybody but me.
That is not unusual. I've had dogs that are very selective. They only want to listen to the top person. But the kids can turn that around. The Ken and Cookie training is the one that would turn that around the most. And here's the funny thing about this. A lot of people think, you know, leadership training, but the dog, I don't want my dog not to love me. This type of training creates more bonding. And that was one of the points in the Ken and Cookie part was, Ken is my husband, Cookie was my dog. And when I'd go off to teach these puppy classes, he'd set her beside him on the couch and try to get the dog to bond. It didn't work. She wouldn't listen to him either. Didn't, just like your kids, doesn't respect. He started to do this Ken and Cookie training. We call it pancake training. And he worked with the impulse control and taught her to listen in that. And she became quite bonded to him. She would fuss when he'd come home, where before it was like, so what?
That's
so this type of training doesn't turn a dog off. They really want leadership. It's like you. Do you want to have someone, do you want to go have dinner with your favorite movie star or the loser down the street?
Well, that one's pretty easy.
Yeah. If you portray yourself as a good leader, they see you like you see the movie star or someone you admire. Do you really admire the people that are wimps that let you get away with everything? Your dogs are the same way in that way.
Yeah, sometimes he just sits and looks at me like, I adore you or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he just sits and looks at me. And
they
then, of
really
course, the
like
kids
it.
Walk in and he takes off and hides under the couch or something.
Hmm.
So, okay, we've got about 10 minutes left. So what would you like to talk about specifically that you think would help other people with their pets?
I think one of the things that I've seen a lot of lately is nervous and very sensitive dogs. I have a chapter called Nervous Nellies, and one of the mistakes people make with their dogs is not socializing. I guess we could talk about, let's say you just bought a dog. Let's say you just got a puppy. What's the best thing you can do? The best thing you can do is, I believe in enrolling in a puppy class. I believe in going to one with positive training only. None of this jerk on the choke collar or force them to do anything, because some dogs will fight the force. I saw one person jerking on the choke collar with Shiba Inu, and the dog flailed and fought him, and they never did get it to sit. So you want positive training techniques. You want to go to a puppy class for two reasons. One thing, it's going to help you hone your skills. And it's going to help socialize your puppy. You want to make sure that the teacher has the intelligence not to just throw out all the puppies to play, but knows how to sort the really shy ones and not put them out with the very bold puppies, because that can set them back. So sometimes when I did the puppy class, I would divide the class for the beginning for the rowdy puppies. In the end, we would send the rowdy puppies home and let the little mellow ones, maybe sometimes one-on-one, two timid ones,
mm-hmm.
And they'll break out of that. Then sometimes, go on.
I just thought of a question, and it's unrelated to this. Do you mind if I ask it? Because I don't want to forget.
Oh, fine. Let's do it.
How do you, like, when I'm not home sometimes, I have a fence in backyard, with the wooden kind of fence, you know, where you can't get out or climb over.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not home and he wants in, he scratches mm-hmm. on the door and ruins my door. How do you stop that?
Boy.
He never does it in front of me.
Uh-huh.
Never. But he'll do it if I'm not around, if he wants in.
Yeah, he will. And at that point, I would do something to try to discourage him.
What? What do you do? You're not there.
You can't catch
him.
There are some things that you can put down that they don't like to step on. I'm trying to remember what exactly they're called. But there's little pads and things that you can get that will kind of keep a dog from wanting to step on it, and that it's either a vibration or something like that that keeps them from wanting to step on it, to put it up as a barrier. And they can learn when the barrier is down and when it's not. Some other people might also, and this might be something to try, sometimes this works, is to, of course, do you want him to sometimes scratch when you are there?
I never want him to scratch on the doors. I don't want it ruined.
There's a product called Boundary Guard, which you have to keep reapplying it. twice a day sometimes.
Okay.
You might try spraying it with a little boundary guard and seeing if that doesn't repel him. I had a dog that was scratching, and this is embarrassing. Okay, so she was scratching at a furnace register thing because we had a mouse. And I put a little boundary guard there because she's actually scratching the carpet near where the mouse came up, near the furnace register. And that kept her from tearing up the carpet. So that's one thing to try. There are some repellent devices for dogs, and that's what you can also do.
Okay, that's a great idea. I didn't even know about that.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. That's a lot of people have that problem and have asked about that. Another thing that I would do with dogs is you have to continue the socialization. If you happen to have a shy or sensitive dog, you need special socialization with people, all sorts of people, and with dogs, all sorts of dogs, in safe environments, of course. A lot of people under-socialize their dogs, and then they suffer throughout the years with dogs that are very almost schizophrenic when another dog comes up or when people come around. Some of the best time to socialize it is that first year, and if you have a dog that's a little bit more timid, you really have to do a lot of socializing. You have to take him out. You have to get him out. If you have a guarding breed, such as a German Shepherd or a Rottweiler, you have to do more socialization than anybody else. One of the biggest misperceptions about guarding breeds is people think, all I need is a German Shepherd or a Rottweiler and I'm going to be safe. And what happens is the dog bites people they don't want to. Here's what I know about German Shepherds and training them for guarding breeds. The people who do it professionally take the dog out and they expose it to horses. They expose it to different people. They expose it to everything. And while they're doing this, when it's a younger dog, they teach it an at-ease command where the dog lays down. Some of these people teach it in German. And they teach the dog what you'd say an at-ease or off-command. And once the dog gets good at that, then they take the dog's natural guarding drive and they start working on the attack because they got to be able to shut off that dog when they need to. And if the dog can't learn to attack, and it gets excited when it's in that attack mode, if it can't learn to turn off, then it can't be a successful guarding dog. You're talking $3,000 to $4,000 worth of training. One of the biggest mistakes I see people do is they try to buy a dog. They think it's going to protect them. It ends up biting people they don't want. And that becomes an expense of $3,000 or $4,000 to undo that.
Mm-hmm. So that something like that happened to me the other day. I went to visit my aunt. It wasn't a German Shepherd, but it was some kind of chow mix dog.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to dinner, and I brought back some bones. And it something's wrong with it. She said that a couple of years ago that while they were at work, it was in heat, and some male dogs came and climbed the fence and basically molested it. And
mm-hmm.
she said it happened for hours, and by the time they got there and got it, you know, stopped it, that the dog's never been the same. So I reached down to give this dog these bones, and I patted her on the back when I did it, and she assaulted me. And
yeah.
I was kind of squatted down a little bit. So what do you do to protect yourself when you're like that? Is there some protective maneuver you can do? Do you hit it in the head or?
No. You've got to be fast when you're dealing with a dog like that. And what this sounds like is the dog has never gotten over that initial trauma, and you can do some desensitizing with the dog where you get it in a controlled situation and you expose it to that trauma, and then you completely settle it down. And then once you settle it down, you again reapproach that trauma. Now, I did a lot of work with Cookie to get her to, I ended up with a picture of her laying next to a Rottweiler with, you know, after she had this attack, we could actually get her that close to laying right next to the biggest Rottweiler he was ever seen. And I knew the dog was safe, although it was, when you see that big of a Rottweiler, the first thing is you kind of go, whoa. I mean, this is a huge dog. And it took me a while to get her settled down, but it was the trust in me. But I also had to desensitize her to even touch, because, I mean, this dog got grabbed up in jaws and was being crunched by another dog. So this other dog that you're talking about, it's sensitive to touch, and it's a matter of you need to put it, work on it in a calming way, and then start reintroducing that touch, because what you did was you reminded it of a fear it's never gotten over. It's like if you're afraid of heights and I take you up on a very high place and say, relax, it ain't going to happen.
Right. I touched her without permission, I guess.
Well, no, you touched her and she wasn't expecting it, and all she thought of immediately was an incident that she's never gotten over the fear of. So you just need to get her over the fear of being touched randomly and unexpectedly. It's basically a fear the dog harbors, and you can't really blame her.
Mm-hmm. No, you can't.
But without help, and again, you know, that's a lot of work.
I never really thought about it until my aunt told me about that happening
mm-hmm.
to her, about stuff like that bothering animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can go through a lot of trauma, too. There's, unfortunately, sometimes people are too harsh on a dog. And again, what's too harsh? That depends on the dog. I've seen some dogs that people have kicked and beaten, and the dog forgives and doesn't hold a grudge. And other dogs you yell at too hard, and it acts like somebody kicked and beat it. And
yeah, that's the way mine does.
Yeah. So what's too harsh varies with the dog. The one that I took on for the 7-month-old reform, nobody had really ever been that cruel or harsh to it, but it would submissively pee all the time because it just couldn't take a lot of pressure from people. And did it have misbehaviors? Just because they can't take pressures, can you attest to this? Doesn't mean they don't do things you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where people get into problem with your more sensitive dog, is because what do you want to do? Well, punish the dog. It did something wrong. It can't take the punishment, but it still wants to do things wrong. So you have to have a different approach.
What about when my dog never does this when I'm home, ever. But occasionally, when I'm gone, I'll come in and the trash will be all over the place.
Ah, yes. There's a lot of people that do devices when it comes to discouraging that. And some people do, if the dog's, you know, some people will put stuff inside the trash that's laced with icky if the dog's always getting and eating it. There's ways that you can get trash cans that are harder to get invincible with. Cookie Dog would tend to, when she got little miffed at me, she would go into the bathroom and grab a Kleenex out and shred it on the floor. And the one time I was sitting there, and this is how we actually broke the habit, she starts marching off to the trash can because she's miffed at me, and I said, "What are you doing?" And we had the kind of communication, because I'd worked her and trained her, that she did stop, and a couple other times I started to watch her and stop her in the process, and she broke the habit. But, I mean, it was just, she had this, the heck with you, look. She started marching over there.
Exactly.
Jack Russells are a pain, but they have the most character you have ever seen a dog have. And, they, you know, it's fun. What can I say? I love Jack Russells. They've got a lot of personality. They're a lot more work to train, and you cannot get away with either reactive training or lack of training, which is where a lot of people get into trouble with dogs in general. Is there's a certain amount of training you have to do. It does set up a relationship when you do.
Well, I tell you what, I couldn't do without mine. He sleeps in the bed with me on a pillow under the cover beside me.
And I don't know if that's
a good thing or a bad thing, but
some of the tougher dogs have the most personality and character. They're a little bit more work, but boy, don't they have the rewards.
And he gets mad if one of my kids come in there and takes his place, too. That's when he goes and pees somewhere, too.
And again, that's something that the preventative thing and is one way of disagreeing with that, and it actually does start helping change the behavior. So if you know it's a time that he's likely to do that, you slap on that belly band, and you'll see, you know, like I said, it's not going to be immediate, but you'll see him starting to quit that behavior because he doesn't like the consequences of the pee being right up against them.
We've got about 2 minutes, but I just thought about this. Another problem that I had with another, a Shih Tzu, actually, who
mm-hmm.
would do just that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When I had my baby, that dog pooped water faucet.
This
I mean,
is common.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, this is not uncommon. Some dogs, a new introduction and disruption in the household stresses them out. And we talked about crates before. Sometimes, and sometimes when people move, they start getting into housebreaking problems. Crates can sometimes set up a routine in and out and a security, and the dog settles down quicker when you start a crate routine where they're in and out. And you might even set the crate next to you and have the dog eat a bone in it and have it in there. And it's just a matter of getting the dog settled back down. They stress out when you change their household. Some of them do. And, you know, you're talking about Shih Tzus. Some of those can be a little stubborn, and I have a whole chapter on stubborn dogs.
Oh, man, that was the most stubborn dog I've ever seen in my life.
And I tell you what I learned.
I got rid of it because it was something was going to happen, you know.
Yes, yes. And yes, stubborn dogs, if you're really wanting to get a stubborn dog turned around, there's some tricks. And let me tell you, I've worked with stubborn ones.
Well, you got about a minute left. Can you tell us a trick?
Oh, gosh. A trick? Give me a subject.
On stubborn dogs.
Oh, on stubborn dogs? You know, I tell you, one of the things that gets us into trouble is they have a different way of accepting the world. They will not do something unless they see the value in it. So you can't just say, you have to sit because I say so. And some of them, you can't even say, here's a piece of hot dog, sit, because the dog will sit there and go, you know, I bet I can get that hot dog without having to sit. So if it's Jack Russell Terrier, that's where they're off to. So what you do is you make it worth their while to comply. And that's what the chapter talks about, different techniques to do it and different instances. We even had one, we got her over her stubbornness as a puppy. The guy didn't even think the dog ever was stubborn in its life. And it was just making it worth that dog's while to comply.
Well, thank you, Peggy, for coming on. Your book, Training the Hard-to-Train Dog, it really is a good book.
Well, thank you so much.
It's an excellent book, and I appreciate you taking the time to come on and sharing this with me. And I encourage my listeners who have a problem with their pet to pick up a copy and visit her website, PeggySwegger.com.
And thank you, and I hope that some of the tips help you with your dog.
Well, it certainly educated me.
And good luck with it.
Thank you, and good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Just
tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr.